Security researcher security kicked off United Airlines flight.
United Airlines flight.
About hacking
tweet
flight.
About
Tactopia. Tektopia er en podcast om mennesker og deres teknologi. Den er udgivet af Ingeniørforeningen IDA i samarbejde med Teknologiens Mediehus, HI-messen, Index Award, Innovation Center Danmark og IDA Forsikring. Mit navn er Henrik Føns, og det er mig, der bestemmer i Tektopia. Cybersikkerhed er helt klart noget, der står højt på agendaen hos rigtig mange virksomheder og offentlige institutioner og regeringer rundt omkring i verden. Der er en stor og også begrundet frygt for, at virksomheder og kritisk infrastruktur bliver hacket på et eller andet tidspunkt. I den her udgave af Tektopia, der kommer du til at hilse på en berømt hacker, der blandt andet har hacket flere fly, mens han har siddet ombord på dem, og faktisk fået dem til at skifte retning. Der er op til flere flyselskaber, som Chris Roberts han ikke må flyve på. Og det skyldes ikke, at han har blåt skæg og går i kilt, og har en kuffert fuld af små whiskyflasker, som han deler rundhåndet ud af, når han optræder på konferencer over hele kloden. Det skyldes, at han har siddet i et fly og hacket flyets computer og fået flyet til at skifte retning, eller måske rettere, han fik det til at flyve sidelæns. Og det har han gjort flere gange. Chris Roberts han er en såkaldt white hat hacker, altså sådan en, der hjælper med at finde sikkerhedshuller i forskellige systemer, hvad enten det er hos private virksomheder, eller i offentlig infrastruktur, eller i hans helt store interesseområde, der handler om transport. Og det er naturligvis derfor, han har prøvet at hacke flere fly, men også er rigtig interesseret i fremtidens biler, der kommer til at være connected med hinanden. Så efter vi har hilst på manden med det blå skæg, Chris Roberts, så skal vi møde Johan Lapassard, der er chef for ENISA, det europæiske center for IT-sikkerhed. Men allerførst lad os hilse på manden med det blå skæg, der godt kan lide at hacke fly.
So Chris Roberts, I'm here at Cyber Week. I work for Attivo Technologies, which is the deception and detection side of the world. We're out in Israel at the moment, but when I'm in the US, I'm typically based in Colorado in the US, but part English, part Scottish.
Security researcher kicked off United Airlines flight for a tweet about hacking the plane. Chris Roberts told FBI agents that he's hacked into commercial in-flight entertainment, or IFE, systems approximately 15 to 20 times. Roberts acquired access to the IFE system by removing a panel underneath passenger seats. He then connected a modified Ethernet cable from the IFE system to his computer. Using default usernames and passwords, Roberts gained access to other flight systems, such as cabin and thrust controls. On one occasion, he caused a plane to temporarily fly sideways, Roberts told FBI agents. Roberts was removed from a flight after publishing a tweet suggesting he might compromise the plane's electronic system. The FBI confiscated Roberts' computer equipment while the search warrant was being processed. Roberts is the founder of One World Labs. They protect people and organizations from cyber threats. No charges have been filed against Roberts in connection to the aircraft systems hack.
Could you tell me a bit more about yourself? Because being here, it seems like you're some sort of a legend. Everybody wants to talk to you.
I'm very fortunate that I've been invited over here for, I think, the last 4 years or so. And partly, I think, because of my background in security research and technology and a lot of the work I've done in transportation, you know, everything from hacking the airplanes to a variety of other things that I've helped them out with. So. And it's nice just to come here. I get a lot of great conversations with everybody, and I try to help.
And now you mentioned transportation yourself. Why is it that you're particularly interested in transportation, trains, boats, planes, cars?
So I think it's a number of different things. One, because they're there, and you know, as a hacker, we look at things and go, what can we do? How can we improve it? What can we do with it? How does it work? And part of it is a lot of times with security and with safety, we try to bring things from like our digital world into the real world. So if we talk in an abstract way about, you know, here's how we hack a computer, not everybody understands that. But if I turn around and say, look, I can take the food off of your table, I can stop you from getting food from the supermarket, the grocery store, or the market, because I can stop the cars and the lorries from getting there, I can stop the planes from getting there. That brings it into a much more of a real world scenario. So we tend to use that sometimes, and that became a focus. And then I'm like, okay, you look at transportation, and it combines a lot of future technology as well as a lot of legacy technology. So from a legacy standpoint, we have obviously all the internet, all of the industrial control systems technologies. And I mean, if you look at locomotives, we have everything going back, you know, 50, 60, 70 years, which is amazing. And then you look at the future where we're going with like the IoT side of the world and everything else. And so how do those two blend together? How do we deal with safety and security? And then how do we communicate that effectively to people? So it's a really, really nice way. It's one of the few industries that combines everything effectively.
But when you look at transportation, I mean, it works. We fly every day, we drive our cars every day and so on. It doesn't seem like they're getting hacked.
So I would agree to some, I would agree, partly agree. The cars are interesting. The cars are definitely more of a target. I think because obviously there's a lot more access to them. But I think if you look at where we are going with technology, I mean, for 50, 60 years, we've always been able to modify our own cars and look at our own cars and do something with them. Whereas now we're getting to a stage where the technology and the software is coming into much more of a play. So our ability to tinker with the cars and to hack the cars is becoming much more affected. And then the problem is, again, if I wanted to influence a car, I could just influence one car at a time. Whereas now with all the connected cars, I can potentially influence tens, thousands, or hundreds of thousands of cars at once just with attacking one point.
So because the car becomes an Internet of Things object, it's possible to hack more cars?
Yeah, I think we're putting more complexity into cars. I mean, if you look at a car these days, the best analogy is a car. The amount of computing power in a car and the amount of computers in a car is the equivalent of a small to medium business. I mean, there's 100 plus microprocessors, the screens in some of the more modern ones, you've got tens, if not 100 million lines of code in there. So you've got a lot of technology that maybe wasn't there 10, 20, 30 years ago. And now this technology is connected to databases monitoring predictive maintenance, databases monitoring driving, the traffic, the systems, and they're correlating all that information into one central site. So now how much can I get to that site and then influence the car? Same thing with maintenance updates and all these other things. So we've gone from a car that was just purely a method of going from point A to point B, either very quickly or in a roundabout way, to a vehicle that now becomes part of our everyday life. We can do our email in our car. We can phone from the car. The kids in the back can watch movies in the car. The cars are talking to each other. So we've added this and it becomes much more of like this hub. There's a couple of the transportation companies that are talking about when we're at home, especially when we look at IoT, that IoT hub that helps us understand the world around us moves to the car, and then in that car it moves to our office. So that vehicle becomes almost a bridge for the lives that we have. So they're becoming more and more prevalent, and therefore they're more connected, which means we're centralizing the data, which means, you know, from an attacker's standpoint, I only have to go to one place to attack many different objects.
And I mean, back in the old days, you could repair your own car. Today, you don't really have access to anything in the car, so you don't have any control of this new device that you're driving.
Well, so it's either you don't have control, or in the US, there's a huge movement in the agriculture space, specifically tractors, and it's the right to repair. So you used to, I mean, perfect example, the John Deere's, a very good friend of mine collects old John Deere's, and they're amazing. They're amazing things, and you could repair them. But nowadays, you know, with all the software and the technology and the processing in it, what's happening is you're buying it, but they don't let you repair it or update it or change it. It's the same thing with avionics. If you buy an airplane from the two big manufacturers, specifically the one based in the US, you buy the plane, but you're not allowed to modify it. You're sure as heck not allowed to change anything in it. So you've bought this, but it's a very restricted purchase agreement. you know, it's the same thing. If you buy your iPhone and it's like, well, we only allow you to do certain things with it. Well, no, it's my darn phone. I paid a lot of money for this. Why can't I? And you can't because when you handed your money over, that's a legal contract that says nowadays I won't modify it, I won't mess with it, I won't break it, I won't jailbreak it, I won't do any of these things with it, but it's still mine. So that control that we as consumers have is being drastically eroded.
And if you look into a future with flying cars, what do you expect?
A mess. A lot of us on the hacking community sitting there with laptops with really big antennas, giggling. I see a lot of complexity. We already have challenges in our skies now with identifying drones. I mean, you look at the problems we have with drones and being able to understand the flight paths and fly off flight paths and understand proximity of these things. And so if you take those up to a certain threshold of like height above the ground, and then you go, well, the flying cars are going to be higher than that, but they won't quite be where we have the main aviation systems. You start to run into this controlled airspace. You start to run into how do we involve the technology? And then we come back to the straight fundamental problem that we have. In our industry, in IT and information security, when something went wrong, the worst case happened, you lost the data on your laptop. That was it, and it was bad, but that was the worst that happened. So we always designed and architected to that. We're like, it's not a problem. We're moving more and more into embedding technology into humans, putting it into critical systems, and I don't feel we have that level of responsibility. We, as an industry, aren't old enough. We're still kids as an industry. So to be able to hold people's lives in our hands, I don't think we're ready for that. We don't design for that. We're not effective at designing for that.
You talk about the difference between security and safety,
yeah,
which doesn't really make sense in Danish because it's the same word. So could you explain it?
No way. Oh, I did not realize. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. This is an interesting one. So from a security standpoint, it's how can I protect against an adversary, an attacker coming in or a criminal coming in and stealing something? So security is very much based off of how do I reduce my risk, how do I look at everything around me and understand how do I protect myself. Safety to me is much more the human aspect. How do I ensure that there's no loss of life? How do I ensure that we are able to maintain the integrity of the human and all the other side that goes with it? Something in, you look at the healthcare side of technology that we're dealing with, we're trying to preserve the human much better than we are the technology. Perfect example would be actually the locomotive industry. The locomotive industry is a safety first industry. They care about the vest you wear, they care about the shoes you wear, the hat that you wear, they care about all these procedures and controls to make sure that you don't get squashed under a train. Whereas from a security standpoint, we look at the computer and go, how do we stop somebody attacking it? We don't tend to care about somebody getting squashed under a train or the car. We care about the security of the system. So there's a very different aspect. One cares about the human, one cares about the technology.
Which brings us to what you mentioned today about the European perspective versus the American perspective.
Yeah. Yeah, the difference with like the GDPR and the difference with data versus the technology. So, I mean, the European perspective is trying to now look at how do I protect the data of the person and how do I hold companies accountable for what they do with the data? Which is a very, very different perspective. You know, the US perspective is, you know, how do I regulate? How do I make sure there's control over the technology? And now they're starting to obviously take a leaf out of the GDPR and go, how do we protect the consumer? But it hasn't always been that good of a focus. And it's not been effective. I mean, in the US and a lot of countries, we obviously have PCI controls, privacy controls, HIPAA controls, and various for healthcare and all these other controls. But unfortunately, a lot of companies will only bring their level of security and safety up to just about to pass those controls and that's it. We're not good at going above and beyond to protect the charges that we're responsible for. I mean, that's a big problem. And I think that's a human nature problem.
So that was the industry, and that was sort of the government side of it. Well, what about the individual? What about education? How do we learn to protect ourselves?
I think that's, you know, it's great. We've had some good conversations today about, to the point, the safety versus security. If I can teach a human regularly, hey, you have a phone, let me help you understand how to keep your kids safe. Let me help you understand how to keep your family safe. Rather than a lot of times, again, I'll use the US as an example because that's where I'm based these days. You know, in the US, there's a regulation that says every year you must put all of your staff through compliance training. So every year they sit all the staff down and they say, you're not allowed to click an email properly, you're not allowed to send the wrong things, and if you do, there will be punitive damages. That's totally wrong. That doesn't work. I mean, it doesn't work on kids. It doesn't work on dogs. Why the hell do we expect it to work on employees? Whereas, you know, what we should be doing is going, how can I help you? How do I educate you? How do I, in January in the US is tax season, how do I help you learn how to file your taxes safely online? What to look for and how to do it? It's February. It's Valentine's Day. Don't click the Valentine's card. Nobody loves you on the internet. And so you do this thing on a regular basis. You help people and you help the person look after themselves, and that will bleed straight back into looking after a company. And so it's taking that more human perspective. It's not a technology problem. It's a human problem, and it's a communication problem that we have.
But what you're stating there, doesn't it mean that you will have to tell people that, for instance, there's these new kinds of speakers that you can talk to, they're unsafe?
Yes. Yes, from all the different manufacturers. I think the argument is, if we just put them in and we put them in default mode and we don't do anything to protect them, then yes, they can be very, very unsafe. Now, in a technology world, we can protect them. We can put firewalls in place. We can lock them down. We can put different commands on them. Rather than yelling out the name of the manufacturer, we can yell out a different safe word or something. But my challenge is still, it comes down to us, the user, having to know that, learn that, and understand that. And that shouldn't be how it is. It goes back to what we were talking about, which is like security by design. It's building in safety and security right at the beginning. And how do we do that? How do we influence manufacturers? How do we influence developers, operations, engineers, and ultimately the people who are putting the money in to these endeavors? How do we help them understand that maybe it's not all about making as much of a profit, and maybe it's a matter of taking care of people?
This afternoon you're going to talk to all the white hat hackers who are here for the Cyber Week. What are you going to tell them?
So this afternoon is a completely non-technical talk. The title is Security Lessons Learned from My Woof Mutts, so my dogs. And I've been very fortunate. We rescued two Great Danes, one older one and one puppy. And I've done a lot of introspective thinking over the last year, and a lot of it's been because of watching the dogs and how I've interacted with them, how they view the world, how they interact with the world, how they're learning the world. And so the talk, honestly, it's absolutely non-technical, but it's about us in the industry. We aren't doing a good job of looking after ourselves. We aren't doing a good job of communicating about reading other humans. We don't do a very good job about how do we interact with businesses. We don't look after ourselves either. And so the talk is really, it's much more of an introspective look and getting people to go, hey, we need to look after ourselves. We need to take care of ourselves and each other. And we need to watch out for each other better than we currently do.
So it's going to be some sort of a hacker's mindfulness talk?
Yeah, very much so. It's there's a movement inside the industry to look at mental health in our industry. A lot of us come out of former military or former government. And a lot of us in the industry are getting burnt out. And so it's much more of a mental health talk about, hey, look, we have to recognize that, we have to understand it, and we have to see what it is that's causing those problems, and how can we help each other, and what can we do about it? What can we accept? What can we do? How can we ask the right questions? So that's what it is. And it yet all stems from two damn great big Great Danes.
Ja, det sagde altså Chris Roberts, så selvom det virker farligt, at han sådan render rundt og hacker de fly, som vi er, tager på ferie med og på forretningsrejser osv., så gør han det altså i en god mening. Og han har jo øvrigt en ret hyggelig fyr med sit blå skæg og sin kilt, og den her kuffe fuld af små flasker med rigtig god whisky, som han deler rundhåndet ud af, når han optræder på konferencer. Og jeg har altså mødt ham til Cyber Week i Tel Aviv i Israel, her i sommer. Her forleden dag på konferencen DLD i München, der fik jeg lejlighed til at hilse på Johan Labazar, der er den nye chef for ENISA, den europæiske organisation for IT-sikkerhed.
My name is Johan Labazar. I'm the executive director of European Union Agency for Cybersecurity. It started last October, so I'm relatively new, and but the agency also is going through a change. We have a new Cybersecurity Act, which is a regulation that defines the mandate and the tasks of the agency that came into force last summer. So it's a period of renewal for cybersecurity in Europe and for the agency. So when you look at cybersecurity, and let's say we draw a very rough parallel with a fire. When a fire breaks out, who do you call? You normally call to your national cybersecurity agencies. The EU Cybersecurity Agency is not, in this sense, a fire brigade that rushes in and helps. But what we do are two things. Firstly, we make sure that everybody follows prudent risk management approaches. That means that everybody installs the fire alarms in their ceilings so that when fire breaks out, it's very quick, the response will be swift. And the second issue, of course, is that in the cybersecurity context, the fires can spread very quickly, and it's very difficult to contain them. So we ensure also that the different fire brigades in different member states, they exchange information and they have a common understanding of where it is going, common awareness. And we help them also to assess when after the fire, what went wrong, how can we make sure that these things don't happen anymore. So that is, in a very simplistic terms, what the EU Cybersecurity Agency does. We help to maintain the ecosystem. We make sure that different fire brigades understand what they can do and what they are supposed to do, and in times of crisis that they exchange information between themselves.
And you mentioned that the ENISA is going through a state of change. So what is the new stuff coming up?
One of the big new elements in ENISA's task is the certification. So what the certification aims at is that all products and services or processes that contain ICT, be it, for example, a router that you will buy in order to create Wi-Fi in your home, or a service like cloud, which you as a business owner might have need to, that these services and products are cyber secure. And for that, we have a new opportunity to create certification frameworks to certify these products and services, to see what are the steps that producers and vendors need to take in order to assure the general public that they have a certain level of cybersecurity in their products and services. And that's a new area in the agency's mandate. It's also something that at the European level we haven't done before. There are different national schemes in place and there are different multinational schemes, but at the European level we don't have a framework yet. But it makes sense to have one at the European level because we have an internal market. The products and services move freely between member states, and that is also the reason why there needs to be a common level of trust. And the certification framework will create trust, or will make sure that at least consumers, when they buy products and services in the future, they can be assured that these products and services have been developed in a way that instills trust.
How do you find common ground within the EU? Because there's a big difference between, for instance, the Nordic countries and the southern countries when it comes to digitalization.
The differences look big inside the EU, but once you go outside the EU, they actually disappear. And sometimes we, by exaggerating our differences, we are our own biggest enemies. In essence, we do have common values and common understanding of what is important. Of course, there are different ways of how you achieve it. But I think once you have established that privacy is an important value in the EU and needs to be protected, also through cybersecurity means, that helps to find the right way forward. There aren't any magical bullets. And also in the EU, we don't look for one-size-fits-all approaches. And I think the 5G cybersecurity, which is a topic that has been very high on the political agenda, proves that. We are now in the process of developing a toolbox of measures, strategic measures, regulatory measures, technical measures that can be used by member states in order to enhance cybersecurity in 5G. Now, these measures are not obligatory, but they give a menu for the member states to choose from so that they can pick the tools that are needed for their particular context. And I think this is the good way forward in 5G, which is a very complex and multifaceted area. In some others, we need a bit more harmonization. Certification, which I mentioned before, it's a voluntary measure, but that does not stop member states or the union, if the certification framework is there, to use it and to put it in the national legislation as a requirement. So we have a number of approaches, and I don't see really different EU member states dragging the blanket into their corner more in different ways. I see more a understanding that we need a common approach, that we need some sort of a common framework which helps to set the basic parameters in place. ENISA is not a fire brigade, but what we can do and we will do is that during these large-scale attacks, we ensure that there is an exchange of information between the appropriate authorities, so that they know what is going on and they can prepare themselves and they can look for different signs and be mindful of the signs in their own critical infrastructure. This is something that is essential, as I said, in the cybersecurity world. Fire spread very quickly. So everybody needs to be on alert when the fire breaks up in one corner. And the fact that it is in one sector does not mean that it cannot spread in other sectors. So this exchange of information and trust between the different parties is essential, and that is also where ENISA comes along. We try to build trust between the different parties and we try to enhance trust. We try to find the best tools in order to make sure that the countries have a good platform where they can cooperate. We have technical tools, we have technical systems, and essentially chat rooms where people who are firefighters, if they detect a problem or they see that there is a problem emerging or they want to ask questions from their partners in different countries, that they can do so securely. So these kinds of tools, of course, is being developed at the European level, and I think it's important that we have these tools in place. We've seen in large-scale attacks that have affected different ecosystems, different sectors like the NotPetya or WannaCry, that the exchange of information between parties is very, very important. And of course, this needs to be done securely.
So this covers both the public and the private sector?
It does cover both the public and the private sector. However, when you look at the Network Information Security Directive, which is the European law that puts the risk management practices in place, it mainly focuses on the private sector. So the energy, transport, utilities, banking, but also operators of digital services are covered to a certain extent. When it comes to the core public sector network, this is the domain of the member states, because this is also part of the nation state's own sovereign territory. So we don't really get involved there. But of course, the national firefighter brigades, which are called CERTs, Computer Emergency Response Team, they look at both of the public and private networks. So they see all. And the information exchange, of course, covers that.
If you look at the sort of the picture, the threat picture right now in 2020, what are you looking for? What is coming up or could be coming up?
Well, the threats and the risks are not really changed. And if we look at it from the, let's say, everyday perspective, the biggest problems that we have everywhere are the concerns cyber hygiene and awareness in different sectors, but also in your private life. So what can you as a person do in order to enhance your own cybersecurity? Well, three very simple steps. Always update your software. Don't reuse passwords. Try to find either a good application that generates secure passwords and use password vaults, or simple tricks which have been also highlighted by national cybersecurity authorities of how to generate passwords which are strong. And also be mindful of your cyber imprint when you are in online environments. I mean, in the physical environment, nobody goes around and brags about their, the critical details about their life, what their bank account is, and etc. In the digital environment, it's the same. You should be mindful of these facts, and by these quite simple, rules. That you don't click on links in phishing emails. In emails whose addressee looks familiar but looks also a bit dodgy. By applying these steps in everyday life, we can tremendously already increase our own cybersecurity, because most cybersecurity attacks, they don't come through system errors. They also come through human errors, because we as humans, we operate their systems. And the second issue, of course, is more future looking. How can we build a cyber secure digital environment in the age of artificial intelligence? This is something that everybody is faced with, and I think in such an emerging technology as AI, we can't yet fix standards or very firm guidelines. But what we can do is we can push prudent risk management approaches. That before we launch these products to the markets, we have risk management practices in place, so that developers and vendors and enterprises who use these applications, they know what steps they should do in order to ensure that there is a certain level of trust in their products already. So, of course, there are numerous attack vectors. I mean, there are non-state and state actors that are out there. There are numerous methods of how cyber criminals take advantage of different systems, but it all boils down to the fact that the steps that every person can do are not so difficult to do. They are really about common cyber hygiene and common cyber sense, and understanding that that there are opportunities in the digital world as well as risks.
Do you also look at how good we are at recovering if we do get an attack? Because I had a conversation with a security officer at a big global provider of technology, and she was actually shocked about how badly prepared companies, especially in Europe, are at regaining their recovering from a hack?
Yes, there is still a learning curve that we need to be mindful of. It all, in the end of the day, boils down to the fact whether companies realize and understand that cybersecurity is not an issue for the IT department. It is actually an issue that touches upon the core business of the company. When a cyber criminal hijacks your databases and you don't know who your customers are, what have you sold them, or how your product development has been progressed, then you have a problem in your core operations. It's not an IT problem. It is a problem of your core business. So, and this reckoning that cybersecurity is not a technological issue which can be relegated to IT department, it is still not fully understood. And I think this is a big issue. We've seen it also in the political world, how this understanding initially wasn't there, but now of course is. It's very high on the political agenda of this European Commission and in all member states. Cybersecurity is seen as the paramount topic that needs to be dealt with. But it's not yet there in the world of businesses entirely.
Og det sagde altså Johan Lapassar, der er chef for ENISA, den europæiske organisation for IT-sikkerhed. Hvis du er interesseret i det her felt og nogle af de andre ting, som ENISA også laver, så kan du med fordel høre Techtopia på Radio 4 som podcast på radio4.dk eller hvor du nu henter din podcast. I den udgave af Techtopia, der kan du for eksempel møde chefen for Cyberlandsholdet, som er sådan et landshold af IT-sikkerhedseksperter under Forsvarets Efterretningstjeneste. Og de deltager i en europæisk turnering, faktisk arrangeret af ENISA, hvor de kæmper mod hold fra andre lande om at være bedst til at hacke. Og så kigger vi også lidt mere på decideret cyberkrig. Du har lyttet til Techtopia. Du kan jo finde Techtopia på techtopia.dk. Og du kan skrive til mig på henrik@techtopia.dk. Du kan følge med på Twitter på @techtopia.dk. Så kan du deltage i teknologidebatten med over 1.500 mennesker i vores Facebook-gruppe, der hedder Techtopia Backstage. Podcasten her udkommer en gang om ugen, og det gør vores søsterprogram på Radio 4 også. Det kan du høre hver søndag kl. 13.05, eller downloade det fra din foretrukne podcast-distributør senere hen. På genhør i næste uge. Techtopia er en podcast om mennesker og deres teknologi. Den er udgivet af Ingeniørforeningen IDA i samarbejde med Teknologiens Mediehus, HI-messen, Index Award, Innovation Center Danmark og IDA Forsikring. Mit navn er Henrik Føns, og det er mig, der bestemmer i Techtopia.